manage sepsis all the time?
It's a big topic.
The reality, though, is we should be tuned in to our antibiograms.
In other words, we don't really have a choice.
We know that it's not just giving antibiotics that matters, it's giving the right antibiotics.
Is cepapine really associated with neurotoxicity?
Sorry, my mind goes kind of sideways thinking about this stuff.
Welcome, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine, Baltimore, Maryland. As always, we are so happy that you're joining us here on another CCPEM podcast for another very clinically relevant discussion on a very common condition we see, and I suspect a very common question that you ask yourself when treating this condition. But before that, let me bring in Dr. Peter W., Dr. Rob Rodriguez, Dr. John Greenwood. You know them so well as the voices here on CCPEM. Gentlemen, it has been admittedly a few weeks since we recorded. It is that springtime. We're now on the other half of spring and all of the conferences. I, quite honestly, was so happy to see the three of you at AAEM for their add-on or pre-conference course, Resuscitation for the Emergency Physician, where you guys really just did an outstanding job in your discussions, teaching lots of pearls and pitfalls in various conditions. So it was so great to see you. We've had other conferences, I think SAEM, a few critical care conferences in the spring. So we are back and thankful to be back recording with you all. Peter, let me start with you. How have the last few weeks been?
Last few weeks in New Orleans has been great. Everybody's recovering from Jazz Fest and the Rolling Stones. And then now it's full on summer.
Very, very cool. Now, when we chatted, I think, didn't you have something related to the Rolling Stones with medical coverage?
I had to organize their medical coverage while they were in New Orleans.
Very neat.
Very interesting.
Very neat. All right. Jumping from New Orleans to San Francisco. Dr. Rodriguez, how are you doing?
Doing great. Sorry, I missed the last episode. Things are going well out here. It was great to see all of you at AAEM. Really enjoyed that conference and also enjoyed our recent SAEM conference. So, yeah. Good to be back in California and happy to be here again.
Outstanding. And didn't one of your mentees get acknowledged or win something?
She did. My medical student mentee won the best paper award at AAEM, and she beat out, I believe it was 75 other medical students and residents for that matter. And she presented a study that we worked on relating to long COVID and its prevalence in underserved populations.
Awesome.
Well, congrats. That's great to hear. All right, jumping all the way back to the East Coast, Dr. Greenwood.
Hey, guys. Good to see you all, and good to be with you on the podcast, as always. I'm sorry, I'm a little hung up on this idea of setting up medical command for the Rolling Stones. Like, in my head, right, it's like, I can picture, you know how bands have those riders of things they want, like a bowl of red M&Ms. Like, did you have to prepare, like, okay, for my fluids, they want lactated ringers or seizure prevention from whatever. They prefer Xanax over Ativan. Like, you know, sorry, my mind goes kind of sideways thinking about this stuff, but that's really funny. That's really cool, Peter.
When you're in your late 70s and early 80s, it reduces it considerably as to what physician coverage you need.
Oh, sure. Yeah, a little extra Tylenol for the hip pain after the dancing. Yeah, for sure.
I suppose it's very telling that they need an EM intensivist as their medical provider there. All right. Well, speaking of critical care, let's switch to our topic at hand. The reason why you're actually listening to this podcast. And well, as we've talked about, I don't know, 100, 200 times, we manage sepsis all the time. It's the most common condition we see. And when patients present to us and we suspect infection, especially when they're on the sicker end, we know that the timely administration of appropriate broad-spectrum antibiotics is critical. And I suspect many of us, when we're thinking about the selection of that broad-spectrum antibiotics, often we're choosing vancomycin and either cefepime or piperacillin-tazobactam. Now, that brings us to the paper that we're going to review that was just published in the last several months. It's published in 2023. The lead author is Kian and colleagues, and it's titled Cefepime versus Piperacillin Tazobactam in Adults Hospitalized with Acute Infection. This was called the ACORN Randomized Clinical Trial. So it asks an important question that we're going to go through. And to kick us off, Dr. Rodriguez, give us the background. Get us started here in this discussion.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. So as you mentioned, the timely and appropriate administration of empiric antibiotics in critically ill adult patients, it's a big topic. And for patients who are at risk for resistant gram-negative infections, the current guidelines recommend an anti-pseudomonal antibiotic, such as cefepime or piperacillin tazobactam, heretofore now known as piptazo. So that's the current guidelines, picking one or the other. But in recent years, there have been a number of observational studies that have reported an association of cefepime with neurotoxicity and other reports of toxicity in terms of AKI with piptazo, especially when it is accompanied by giving vancomycin. So kind of the pathophysiology behind the rationale for these concerns are that, first of all, cefepime crosses the blood-brain barrier and it exhibits concentration-dependent inhibition of GABA receptors and therefore can be postulated to be associated with neurotoxicity such as coma, delirium, encephalopathy, and seizures. And neurotoxicity is reported to be more common in patients who receive cefepime when they have impaired kidney function and other conditions that disrupt the blood-brain barrier, as perhaps you might see in meningitis. In terms of piptazo, the mechanism, the proposed pathophysiologic mechanism relates to decreases in the secretion of creatinine into the urine and increases in creatinine in the blood by inhibiting an organic anion transporter on kidney tubular cells. That's a big mouthful. But the bottom line is that these are all observational studies, and there's been no randomized trial that has compared cefepime with piptazo. And so the objective of this study was to compare the safety of cefepime and piptazo in adults presenting to the hospital with suspected infection and to look at the incidence of these toxicities, specifically looking at the incidence of neurotoxicity and AKI.
Outstanding, Rob. Great, great introduction. And I suspect many of us are probably familiar with those observational studies and may have been thinking or may be thinking when we're in the ED, whether we're in the ICU, and we're thinking about giving piptazo with vancomycin. Well, maybe not. Maybe it is going to induce AKI and we lean away and choose another anti-pseudomonal gram-negative antibiotic. All right, Peter, let me turn to you. Rob gave us an outstanding background, but tell us specifically what the ACORN trial was.
Yeah, so when we look at the methods of the ACORN trial, understand that it's a pragmatic, open-label, parallel group, randomized comparative trial. It took place in both the emergency department and the medical intensive care unit, Vanderbilt University Medical Center. So a single center trial. The patients that were included, adults greater than 18 years of age, they had to either be present in the ED with the suspicion of infection or within the ICU. They had a clinician-initiated order for either cefepime or piptazo within 12 hours of presentation to the hospital. So these weren't hospital-acquired folks, but ED and ICU enrolled folks. Who got excluded? Well, if you were less than 18 years of age, if you had an allergy to cephalosporins or to penicillin, if you received more than one dose of anti-pseudomonal antibiotics or penicillin within the previous 7 days, if you were incarcerated, you got excluded. If the treating clinician determined that one or the two drugs represented a better treatment option for you, you were excluded. So what are the trial procedures? So you were randomized in a one-to-one ratio in that fashion to receive either cefepime or piptazo. In the cefepime group, you got 2 grams IV push over 5 minutes every 8 hours. So I want you to think about that. Again, when you're thinking about drug administration and what your nurses would like to see as an order. that's pretty strong. And you compare that to the Piptazo group that received 3.375 gram bolus over 30 minutes. That's only for the initial administration. That was then followed by an extended infusion of the same dose, 3.375 grams, every 8 hours. The treating clinician determined the duration of antibiotics, whether to administer additional antibiotics such as vancomycin as a tag-along or not. And both the ED and the ICU were staffed by dedicated clinical pharmacists. So this is a boon. And not many of our listeners may have that luxury, but if you have it, celebrate it because it's tremendous help. So let's look at the primary outcome. The highest stage of AKI, the acute kidney injury, or death by day 14. They used a 5-point ordinal scale and the stage of AKI defined using the KDIGO criteria, so KDIGO criteria. The secondary outcomes, proportion of patients who experienced a major adverse kidney event at day 14, the composite of death, new renal replacement therapy, or persistent renal dysfunction. They also looked at a secondary outcome to be the number of days alive and free of delirium and coma within 14 days, assessed using the CAM, CAM ICU, or a RASS, RASS score.
All right, Peter, outstanding. So really looking at an ED and MICU patient population, as you mentioned, and then either cefepime or Piptazo, some differences in how the drugs were administered, but really the primary outcome of AKI, and then one of the secondary outcomes, I think, looking to target or assess that neurotoxicity with delirium or coma. Well, having said that, now that we know what the study was, Dr. Greenwood, you're going to bring us home with what the study results were. Is Piptazo associated with AKI? Should I stay away from it? And is cefepime really associated with neurotoxicity? What did the study find?
All right, well, let's go. So this was a moderate-sized trial. About 2,500 patients were ultimately included in the primary analysis. And as expected, this was a patient population with a median age of 58 years. Now, impressively, 95% were enrolled in the emergency department. And I think that's something we would expect, right? Because as we all know, we've really focused on getting the time to antibiotic administration down in patients who present with concern for sepsis. And they did it pretty quick. They rapidly enrolled these patients. The median time was within almost an hour of meeting inclusion criteria. So great job to the team. 54% of the patients were diagnosed with sepsis at the time of enrollment, with abdominal and pulmonary sources being the most common. Now, I suspect the others had suspected sepsis, so this was more empiric treatment. Randomization split 50-50 for the most part, 1,200 about in each group. And then the median duration of receiving antibiotics that were assigned to the randomization was approximately 3 days. Crossover is an important question, always whenever you're looking at these binary intervention trials, especially when they're these like pragmatic trials where clinicians can drive therapy and are open to opportunity to change if they think it's important. So in the cefepime group, 19% received at least one dose of Zosyn. That's a really high amount. And counter that to the Piptazo group, 17% received at least one dose of cefepime. So not to get in too much editorial right here, but those are pretty dirty in terms of keeping the groups separate to kind of make some conclusions about the ultimate results. But let's keep going. How about how much vancomycin was administered? Well, in the cefepime group, 83% of patients received at least one dose of vanc, and compare that to 81% of the Piptazo group. So pretty similar. And they all received a median duration of 2 days. Probably once that MRSA swab came back negative, they took it off quick. Let's look at the primary outcome, the highest stage of acute kidney injury or death by day 14. Well, there was no statistical difference between the groups. The cefepime group had 75% survival or no AKI, and that compared to 73% of the Piptazo group who did not die or experience AKI. Well, they said they want to look at safety outcomes, so let's cone in a little bit and look at the major adverse kidney events between the groups. So the cefepime group had about 10% compared to 8.8% in the Piptazo group, so no statistical significance there. The neuro outcomes, specifically looking at coma, delirium by day 14, similar between both groups. Okay, let me rephrase that. It was similar, but there was a statistical significance in the difference between the groups. So cefepime had 20.8%, piptazo 17.3%. So close, but it did meet statistical significance for patients in the cefepime group who had fewer days alive and free of delirium and coma.
Thanks so much, John. So interesting findings here where, at least from the primary outcome, no difference in AKI. And then as a secondary outcome, it does look, while it's small, a statistically significant increase in the neurotoxicity manifestations of coma and delirium. I'm going to go to the three of you for your thoughts on this and clinical implementation, but at least let me spend a few seconds here just outlining the limitations as we normally do on each podcast when we hit a paper. Peter, you mentioned single center, so we do have to think about generalizability. Having said that, 95% of patients were enrolled in the ED, and the two most common sources of sepsis being abdominal along with pulmonary. Unblinded, so I think, John, you had mentioned that in terms of overall assessment. And then the crossover. So roughly 1 in 5 patients got a dose of the other antibiotic. So that does complicate and limit overall the results. And I think it's something that in terms of the duration of antibiotic, I would think that those getting admitted to the hospital concerned for sepsis headed to the MICU, a median duration of antibiotic days of 3, it might be on the lower side compared to some. And overall, Peter, you had mentioned this in terms of the trial procedures. There's a difference in the way the drugs were given. So more cefepime as an IV push versus an extended infusion with respect to piptazo. So I think those are most of the limitations. But let me turn to you, Peter, and get your thoughts on incorporating this trial that many looked at as an important study from the 2023 literature. Does this give us some reassurance that probably the observation from that observational trials about AKI with piptazo and vanc may not be as significant as once thought? And do we need to consider the neurotoxicity in patients we think cefepime is a better drug for?
I'll just say, I'll point to another study that was published in 23 in the Journal of Antibiotics that looked specifically at this same question, but looked at a group of patients with hospital-acquired pneumonia. And they showed really no difference, with some small breakout being a node of difference in those patients with strong suspicion for aspiration pneumonia. These were typically all hospitalized patients, right? But those patients that had tube feeds and the suspicion was for aspiration, they had a nod or a signal towards a benefit from piptazo in those patients. But otherwise, everything else was equal. So I think we have growing literature to point that there's equivalency here between the two choices. The reality, though, is we as emergency medicine clinicians, and particularly those of us who practice critical care, should be tuned in to our antibiograms. And if the antibiogram for our hospital for undifferentiated sepsis gives a nod to either one of these agents, we should choose that agent. And we should be aware of what our own results are for our antibiograms in our own institutions if we have the benefit of those.
Great, great points. Love those, Peter. Rob, your thoughts?
Yeah, this study doesn't move the needle a lot for me. You know, the differences, there was a lot of cross-contamination as indicated, and the differences weren't all that large. Additionally, I don't know how it is at your hospitals, but I work in general at two hospitals. And one hospital has piptazo exclusively, and the other has cefepime almost exclusively. In other words, you don't really have a choice at my two hospitals. I don't know if it's the same for you guys, whether you have a real choice between the two at your hospitals. But I suppose, if anything, if I were to be given the choice at my hospitals between the two, in the cases in which I have concerns about, like, delirium and coma and blood-brain barrier issues, I might stay away from cefepime in those cases. I think that's probably the only way in which this study is going to change my practice.
Thanks, Rob. Really great points there. And John, bring us home on your thoughts.
Listen, I agree with all you. I think that it doesn't change much for me. I 100% agree with Peter's comment about the local antibiogram. We know that it's not just giving antibiotics that matters. It's giving the right antibiotics that matters. And if locally there's more resistance to one, you have to pick the drug that most likely going to give you the best chance at nailing that bacteria that's causing whatever the issue is going on. I will point out just one thing that I thought was interesting, that it didn't mention that they reduced the dose for patients with baseline kidney dysfunction. It looks like over 50% in each group had some degree of acute kidney injury. And so there's ways to mitigate that. So with patients with certain GFRs, you know, at some point you want to decrease your dose of Zosyn, the 2.25 dose as opposed to the full dose. But it seems like it was a flat dose either administered one side or the other. So if I'm concerned about kidney injury function, definitely for those with CKD or a new acute AKI, you know, I'm going to reduce my dose of Zosyn and probably get the same penetrance and result. And then, you know, lastly, cost is always something that I think we have to be cognizant about when we're thinking about one antibiotic over another. You're going to choose empirically linezolid or daptomycin versus vancomycin was pretty cheap. I'll err on the side of vancomycin if it's equivalent on my antibiogram. I think the cost is pretty similar between cefepime and Zosyn. So I think that it shouldn't sway someone to administer one drug over the other because of thought about cost, perhaps before when the drug was mutually exclusive to the name brand, that might make a difference. But if it's 50-50, just pick the right drug for the right patient and you'll be doing the right thing.
As always, gentlemen, outstanding points. It's been a really, really great discussion on a recent article that appears in the JAMA, their section for caring for the critically ill patient. Once again, a congrats to Dr. Keon and colleagues on their publication of the ACORN trial. And just to the three of you for taking us through that. I think it's once again been enormously beneficial and really appreciate catching up with you all again. And we will get our next podcast out much sooner. Our apologies for the conferences here in the spring, and really looking forward to talking with you all on our next podcast. Bye for now.